Hello, hello, hello. I am your Storme de Larvaria, hostess with the most, this Michael Munoz. And welcome to In Yo Mouth.
In Yo Mouth.
I'm the queen of food who's always in the mood.
To lick it right, lick it good, show you how to.
Oh, God, that's good.
I want to know what she eats from the streets to the sheets.
So open wide, honey.
I'm coming.
In Yo Mouth.
Goosebumps.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey there and welcome back, folks. Once again, I am your hostess with the mostess, Munoz, and welcome to episode 2 of the In Yo Mouth Pride series. Yes, folks, it is Pride Month, and for a few episodes at least, I wanted to highlight some fabulous past guests and their thoughts on representation, their thoughts on coming out, their stories, because you know what? Going back into the archives, if you will, because you know we are over 4 years in the making now, the royal we, that is. And just going back into the archives, it's really beautiful and nice to be reminded of people's stories, of what they share, of the insight my guests have given us, you know, the struggle, the strife, the beauty, and all through food, and all through food, for the most part, that is. And so I had such a great time doing this last year that I thought I would do it again. And today is episode 2. For those of you out there who don't know who Storme de Larvaria is, speaking of this day in gay history, even though we're not there yet, Storme de Larvaria was an American woman known as the Butch Lesbian, whose scuffle with police was, according to Storme and many eyewitnesses, was the spark that ignited the Stonewall Uprising, spurring the crowd into action. Know your history, peoples. How y'all doing out there? How are y'all doing? I am up. I am ready. I am living. Queen's Pride had just passed this weekend. Queen's Pride is one of my favorite events of Pride season. It is so much fun. And one of the main reasons is because, you know, in Manhattan proper, there isn't really like a Latino gay bar, like dedicated to like Latino people, or like a Black and Latino gay bar, or, you know, like a place for people of color, gay people of color, LGBTQ people of color to kind of gather, and, you know, at where they play like salsa and reggaeton and all the good music, you know. And as much as I love the Flaming Saddles and their country music, it ain't it. It ain't it. And so it's just really beautiful to be with the people and, you know, watch the performances of the ballroom houses that performed, and just be with the people. Oh, my God. But oof, it was a drunken day, y'all. I have not had a day like that in a minute, not even in Mexico. And I blame it all on the nutcrackers. Have y'all ever had a nutcracker out there? And I'm not talking like no. Or that some people call it Jesus juice or quarter waters. Nutcrackers infamously are just sold in the street in the summer or sold on the beach in the summer here in New York. And they're basically, alcohol in like some sugar juice or something. You don't even know what they are. These guys sell them and they're very strong and very sugary and very delicious and will ruin your life, as I have experienced the next day. Oh, it was a struggle. But we're here, we're queer, we're alive again, and we are hydrated, and we had the best time at Queen's Pride. You know, drink, but drink responsibly out there. And I want to get to the getting on today. And in the grand tradition of In Your Mouth, I need to wish you happy National Jelly-Filled Donut Day. Yes. Even though National Donut Day just passed, so I don't know why we need another donut day for jelly-filled donuts. Were jelly-filled donuts not feeling included on National Donut Day? Wasn't like Dunkin' Donuts and Krispy Kreme just handing out donuts? You know, do we like jelly-filled donuts? I guess I like a jelly-filled donut. I love a Boston cream. Yes. Yes. Give me some Boston cream pie, honey, in a donut. You know, before Dunkin' Donuts took out the trans fats, those Boston cream donuts were the best. Give me all the trans fats. Give me all. Because we're here. No, I'm not even going to. I'm going to stop myself while I'm ahead. And oh, my God. Anywho, no matter what you celebrate out there, I guess, but we're not eating carbs this month, y'all, because it is Pride, and we need to be ready for the last Sunday in June here in New York. We need to, do what we do, go for a run, get on the treadmill, go get that lipo laser, or you know what? Love yourself. Just love yourself in the beautiful body that you are. Oh, my God. Speaking of gay body dysmorphia, when I was in Mexico, right, I'm feeling good. I've been running. I'm feeling great about myself and where I'm at. And there was this great bathing suit. It kind of looked like a bikini with tie sides, more often sold to female presenting people. But it was in this shop, and I was like, oh, my God, I'm obsessed. And I saw all these, like, muscle boys with it on, too, and they look great. And I tried it on, and then, like, the gay body dysmorphia kicked in, and I couldn't buy it. And now I regret not buying it. Ugh. I even went online to look for it, and I couldn't find it. So if any of you know where to find this bathing suit and know what I'm talking about, they sell them all over in, like, the 50 swimsuit shops and PV. I need one. Send me a link, somebody. And speaking of links and things to buy, the merch is selling. Thank you to those of you out there who have bought the merch, the Pride merch, any of the merch. As you know, if you buy anything from now through July, I am donating the proceeds to the Ali Forney Center, which helps LGBTQ youth here in New York City. Yes, trying to give back to the community that I love so much. And the Pride merch is cute, y'all. Don't forget to send me photos. And moving right along into this day in gay history. You know what? This one's a doozy, y'all. Did you know that in 1901, get this, 1901 in Spain, the first documented same-sex marriage in Spain in post-Roman times is performed. Marcela Gracia Ibáñez and Elisa Sánchez Logria, both teachers, are married by a parish priest in A Coruña, Galicia, with Elisa using the male identity Mario Sánchez. The couple was exposed by Galician and Madrid newspapers, and as a consequence of this, both quickly lost their jobs, were excommunicated, and were issued an arrest warrant. So that the excommunication could take place, the parish priest requested a doctor examine Mario to check if he were a man or a woman. That's messed up. That used to happen in the gay bars, like up until the Stonewall Uprising as well, right? If you were in female presenting clothes, the police would take you into the bathroom and check your parts to see if you were male or female. Messed up. But look at this. Mario agreed, and when the doctor issued his verdict, Mario attempted to pass for intersex, whose condition had been diagnosed in London. Regardless, the marriage certificate was never officially voided. The marriage, according to the archive, is still valid. They moved to Portugal, where they were imprisoned, tried, and later released. It is rumored that they fled to Argentina after the Spanish government demanded their extradition from Portugal. It is unknown what happened to them after that. Same-sex marriage was legalized in Spain in 2005. Crazy. Crazy little factoid today. Crazy, crazy, crazy. And beautiful at the same time. And you know what? I hope that they lived out a beautiful life together, you know what, for a long, long time after that. Wow. Wow, guys. And I guess that's a great segue into today's part two of my Pride series, because I've noticed that there's, you know, I love to highlight all the LGBTQ food people of all colors, of all stripes, of everywhere. But I've noticed that this past year especially, we've had a lot of, like, just, you know, international stories or diasporan stories, you know, stories of the diaspora, people who've moved here and carry their culture. You know, Maria Maison or Chef John Kung, you know, promoting third culture cuisine, or Marcel Afram. Why are all these names escaping me today? Or Claire Rouget and Rosemary Kimani, you know, who are just traveling the world and being, you know, just food gurus and, you know, shining a spotlight on lesbian couples. And I just kind of wanted to gather those people all together in one spot and share their thoughts and ideas and their coming out stories. So without further ado, I thought it would be actually really great to start with the beautiful, beautiful couple and their coming out stories, Claire Rouget and Rosemary Kimani. This episode, please go back and listen to this episode, because they are so beautiful. And they shine so brightly, and I love them so much. And their just story and how they are together really, really comes through. And I wanted to start with coming out today. So take a listen to Claire Rouget and Rosemary Kimani of Authentic Food Quest.
And as you mentioned, it's for me, it's really been a journey. I came out late, and it's first is really coming out to oneself. And I grew up really around, you know, around guys. I knew right away I didn't want to conform to society, you know, being the good girl who plays with the girls. No, I was playing with boys because I was surrounded by my brother's friends. They were older and there was no girls of my age. So I did most of what boys do when they're young, and I loved it. And as I grew up, I also went into a field. I was an engineer, and I actually graduated doing mechanical engineering. Again, a field where it was mostly male around me. And was fun. I love being with guys, but I never really fell in love. I was like attracted, dated guys, but it was just a fun thing to do. You have to do, you know, when you're young adults.
Yeah.
And I didn't fall for, oh, I need to have kids. Like, this is never part of my interest. So it's only later on when it was out of the university, out of being in the dorms with all friends, and then feeling lonely at home, starting to question, what do I really want? You know, starting to be heavy, to be lonely, and what kind of relationship do I want? And that's how I started to second guess the idea to be with guys, because I didn't have so much attraction to guys. At the time, I was in France, and in Paris, things were very open. Where I was a little less, it was hard to find resources to be exposed to that. And shortly after, I moved to the US, and because I was in Chicago, it's a large city, then I reached out to LGBT community, found resources, met with a lesbian group, and that's where I felt, you know, that's where I came to myself and I knew this is the right thing for me.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And similarly, when I came out fully in university myself or in college, when I got back to New York, I had no friends, right? Because anybody in high school and people had moved away and we had moved into a new home and whatnot. And I went to the LGBTQ center here in Manhattan, not only to find a doctor that specialized in LGBTQ health, but also there were groups that I was part of where I made friends that I still have friends to from this day. So it's a good point that you make as well, that you need to support, or we need to support, our local LGBTQ centers, because even if we're not using them, the resources they provide for the community, for our young people especially, right, and our seniors, is phenomenal and tremendous. And shout out to the LGBTQ centers all over the world doing the work for the people. Now, do you want to jump in?
I can jump in here, I will jump in, but I have to really say something about the support as well too, and having also other people and other role models. So I grew up in Kenya and in Nairobi, as I mentioned earlier, and it's not a very open society, and I certainly grew up in a very closed home. So there was no deviation. I mean, so I had boyfriends, but there was nothing there. And so when I finally got a chance to go to school in the U.S., I remember my first semester, one of the friends that I met, and we're still good friends today, he was gay. And when I met him and we were sitting in class and we were talking and I got to know him, he's just such a regular guy. He took me to his home. I had dinner with his family, loving family. And that's when I started to really think about me and what I want and who really I am. And then when I saw how he is, you know, he's one of my best friends today, how he's well-adjusted, his family loved him, I realized that I can do that for myself. I can create the life that I want. So in my case, I had to, in a way, cut ties. And I think it was mutual on both ends. I ended up telling my parents, after I finished undergrad, then I went to graduate school. And then it was only after, when I started my first job, that I found a community, much like Claire mentioned. This was in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And very much, I didn't know anyone. It was my first job, new city, and I needed support. And I decided at that time, I'm going to face this being gay thing. Am I gay? Am I not? My parents, I knew that it was not going to work, but I needed that support. So through that center, I found support. I ended up meeting my first girlfriend at the time. And it was, you know, so because of that, I told my parents officially, and it did not go down well. My mother was a member of the church. I don't know that she still is. And so she would send me recordings of singing and the choir singing, because America has, I don't know, condemned me or changed me.
My mother and I, we used to have prayer sessions, and my mother loves me very much. I love her too. We have a great relationship, but we used to have prayer sessions in the car when she would drive me to college that I would find a girlfriend.
Wow.
So yeah. I can relate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So as a result in my case, I chose me and I chose my happiness. And so we don't have a relationship with my parents. I don't want their life. I don't want their life for me. I want my life. So that's what I've chosen. So
choosing you. I love that. Yeah. Yeah. You're like literally giving me all the things today. I literally chose me. And sometimes you need to. And sometimes that's the most important lesson to learn. I think you both would agree, as people of a certain age here, that, you know, choosing you may be the most important decision you make in your lifetime.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And I remember my mom's sister is in the U.S. She's based in the U.S. as well. And she asked me one question that fundamentally changed my life. She said, are you preparing yourself for life in the U.S. or life in Kenya? And when I answered the question, life in the U.S., that was also tied to that whole idea of then you live with the choice you have made because you know you're not going to go back because you're not going to go back and conform to life in Kenya. So that, again, was also very helpful. But it came to making that one decision.
Maybe an act of faith and courage in oneself. Their whole episode is strewn with gems like that. Acts of faith and courage, choosing oneself. I mean, it's a good one. It's a good one. And boy, have we come a long way in the editing process. Let me tell you that. Listen, I have a degree in music, not in sound engineering, but honey, she's learned a lot. Next up on the roster for today, speaking of acts of faith and courage and choosing oneself and just knowing oneself really to the core, is one of my favorite people ever that I have come across. You know, all my kids, all my guests, right, are my favorite, but Maria Maison, that's my hermana. That's like, she touched me through the computer, through the phone, in very, very special ways. And her story, her journey, the way she speaks about her journey and who she is and how grounded she is not only beautiful to see, but it is an inspiration. And this is what she had to say about the start of her journey and not realizing the impact she would have once she has a platform. Take a listen to this.
What I really, really love, right, and we don't often see it, especially on a national platform, are not only, you know, people of color, or like Black and Latino color represented in like really, really fabulous lights in the food world, but also queer people of color, right? And so you as a lesbian woman just shining so bright and doing so well and winning restaurant wars, but then coming together with your Latino community on the show, what was that like?
You know what? It was funny that you touched the subject. I was talking to my sister yesterday. Y me dice, hermana, sister, you actually click, like you feel a lot of boxes. You have no idea what it is to be you now. And I'm like, what do you mean? I'm just me. I like to cook. And yeah, I happen to be gay and Mexican and Catholic, whatever. It's like, mijita, you are like living through a lot of people. And you need to soak it all in. And then she made me think, I never expected this blessing that is, yeah, of course, Top Chef that gave me a voice. But after Top Chef, how many Mexican people's like, thank you for representing our culture. You know, you're amazing. And yeah, you're gay. Cool. You know, and it's funny because even lesbians have a stereotype. There's a stereotype for everything. And then they see this little, you know, loud, chubby Mexican lady with a wife and a son, like, you know, let's go to soccer. Let's go to this. Like, normalized it. And I'm like, wow. I personally wasn't aware of the phenomenon that all of this is happening around me. And I'm just blessed. I just want to... Justice to our culture, justice to our life, our gender, Lily and I live with pride 100%. We are proud moms, we are proud wives, we are proud chefs, firefighters, and we live our lives the way we want to be treated.
My favorite thing about that clip specifically is she says, we live our lives in the way we want it to be treated, right? And that's what we as LGBTQ people obviously are mostly doing, I would hope, right? And yet somehow our rights and our freedoms and our existence, you know, in general, is just being challenged on the daily. Still on the daily. And especially in hyper-masculine spaces like the kitchen, like male-dominated spaces like the kitchen. And and giving a new voice and giving a new face to what it means to be, you know, an artist, a food artist, somebody leading the charge in this specific field is what I've always been trying to do now. And I think it's just really, really beautiful, right? And the meaning of pride for me, right? She's being prideful in just her family and who she is. Take a listen to this next clip of her talking about her exit from Top Chef and what it meant to her.
I wanted to pack my knives with grace. And that's what Top Chef taught me, that I am a great chef. And my journey is not even like my journey be gone when I pack my knives. Because now I'm talking to you. Now I have, you know, a beautiful message to throw out there. You know, it's okay to be gay. It's a beautiful thing. It's okay to be Mexican. You know, you're not going to, the Catholic guilt, the shame, no, you're not going to go to hell. It's one of those things that it's okay to be yourself. And I did it in a way that what you see is what you get. You know, I have no filter. My mouth has had me in many, many troubles in the past and the future, because I'm not, the world is collapsing in front of us. Look at 2020. I mean, people dying out of the flu. And now you need to tell it. You need to put it out there. You need to tell it to the universe. This is who I am. And I mean, always with respect, because there's people that don't agree, and that's okay. You know, en su salud lo hallarán, señor.
Tell it to the world. Yes, right? Wise words from a wise woman. But that's what Harvey Milk used to preach as well. You know, come out of the closets and into the streets, because, you know, if they knew who you were and they knew who you are and what you stand for, then it becomes the norm. It becomes more relatable, you know, it becomes brothers, sisters, neighbors, as opposed to this unknown thing that certain people don't understand. And I love that. I hate that we still have to keep talking about this. But then again, I wouldn't have a passion project if we didn't, right? I go on to ask Maria about coming out. And once again, she lays it down in a most beautiful way about being gay and Mexican. Take a listen.
You don't see a lot of Mexican gay people out there, because in Latino culture, it's very hard to come out. And it's very hard to come out. And to me, it's funny, because I thought not in a million years that I was going to come out. I always thought that I was going to live in the closet, because that's what I was told. That's what I was. I didn't want to hurt people. I didn't want to, you know. And then when I met Lily, I'm like, oh, crap. Hold my beer. I'm going to go come out. And I was married to a guy before, which I adore my ex-husband, and he's the father of my child. But our journey, I believe that everything happens for a reason. So that was my journey with him. We created a beautiful human being that's our son. And now I have Lily, and Renee has two beautiful mothers and a kick-ass father. And he's a family. He has three parents.
That's incredible. But let's continue down that road, because we always eventually get there. And it's important to hear, because, you know, you just said it. It's about message, and it's about getting it out there, and it's about respect. And you know, and our stories matter, right? Because we never know who's listening. So what was coming out like for you?
It was hard. I mean, not going to lie to you, being married to a guy, coming from a very small city that is Navojoa, Sonora, very Catholic, very social, you know, el que dirán driven. And I had to do it. I had to do it to be true to myself and be happy. So I did it. It was a rocky road. And I believe that is always going to, not, I don't want to say rocky, but it's going to be different in a good way. It's going to take time. I love my dad. My dad is super religious. My dad loves Lily. And my mom is going to, you know, take time. But the most beautiful relationship I got of coming out is the closeness with my siblings. The trio of the two girls and a boy that makes my brother and my sister us together, it's beautiful. So we never been this close. We had our ups and downs like any other family. But now it's, I mean, my God, my sister is one of my biggest fans. And we already patch our, you know, our problems and we just go ahead. And my niece...
Do you think that it's because there was a switch flipped? There was like a more genuine, honest you being presented forward that kind of attached this and made you closer?
Probably, but I'm never going to forget those words that my sister said a couple years ago, probably 5-6 years ago. I've been out and about for 11. She said to me, "You look happy." And I'm like, "Huh? Yeah, your skin, your demeanor, everything about you, your aura looks happy." And I'm like, "Yeah," I said, "because I have nothing to hide. Like, it's because I go to bed with the person I'm supposed to be with. I am raising a son with teaching him about every single path of life. Because I'm teaching a son that it's okay to be gay. And it's okay to be gay, successful, Mexican, whatever. It's okay to be straight with two gay moms. It's okay to be, you know, the new generation. I get lost with the LGBTQ. I get lost because I barely speak English. But I am teaching my son that it's okay. As long as you don't kill, you don't steal, it's okay. At the end of the day, whatever your path is, it's going to be okay. So I told my sister, without getting all emotional, I told my sister, "That's why you see me happy."
Again, such amazing words from Maria Maison. And honestly, you know, keeping that secret and not living in your truth, right? Once you expel that and once you stand in your truth and you're standing, you know, on solid ground, you know, it's okay. You will be okay. It's how the It Gets Better project started, from that idea of like, you may be struggling now, but it will get better, right? You're okay. And yeah, I just love her so much. Go back and listen to her episode and show her all the love. I want to take a quick break because I need a glass of water, but I will be back with Marcella Fromm and Chef John Kung. Yes.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Marcella Fromm is a beautiful trans non-binary chef in the D.C. area who has made their mark with their Shababi Chicken and with their advocacy and all sorts of things. And they just happen to be my first trans chef on the podcast. Listen, I dive deep into people's Instagrams, TikToks, wherever I can find people who really speak to me. And I just noticed at this time that there weren't a lot of trans people. I wasn't seeing a lot of trans visibility in the kitchen. And I go on to question Marcel about this specifically. And this is what they had to say. PS.com, we tried to pack a whole lot into Marcel's episode. It's hysterical and really a humdinger of an episode. You need to go back and listen. But listen to what Marcel has to say about trans people in the kitchen. But why do you think that is, that like I haven't found more of the trans community in a food space?
Well, because
large thigh.
Yeah, I mean, it's so it's not complicated, right? Like there has been something really, really wrong with the industry for a really long time that includes inclusivity and also safe spaces. And we are the most vulnerable, you know, and there is a lot to fear. And I think that what I realized, I actually kind of realized, I'm 36 years old. I didn't come out until last year when I was 35. I didn't even really start realizing that I was a trans man and realize that there was a space for that in general, even outside of the food world, until I was like 34 years old. Just because there was such maybe my narrow visibility on it and I kind of had blinders, and that may have been intentional, but that's like a whole nother thing. But Chef Pax in Puerto Rico actually was someone that I connected with online, and they're transmasculine. And I got to know them, and I actually went to Puerto Rico and we met and we had a great time. This was before I came out, and the way that they spoke about themselves and being trans on their social media was really eye-opening to me, and that visibility was so impactful. And I realized that not only is there a space to be a trans man, but also non-binary. And that was like, just blew my mind, right? And as I kind of started to search for my people in the spaces of everywhere, right? Because like rabbit hole, like, okay, where are we? Like, I need this visibility. I need to understand myself better. I need the connections. You're right. I was like, this is the only other person that I've been able to see that I can relate to. Wild. And I also, so I came out on social media August of last year, and the response was so overwhelming. And I mean, like, people, like, my bubble was super supportive, and I'm really grateful and very privileged for that. I also, like, am in a stable place, right? And I think that maybe a lot of my adulthood wasn't stable, so that made it a little difficult to come out or to understand myself, find myself, whatever. Nonetheless, a lot of the people that reached out to me are trans people that are not out or scared because they are in the restaurant industry. And, you know, we've seen this major shift of like all of these terrible douchebags getting what they deserve.
Yeah, we can say it. This is our space. Yeah. This is our space.
Yeah, for all of the right reasons, right? Mm-hmm. And we're seeing people getting called out for all of the right reasons. We're seeing this major shift, I think, with, you know, kind of like my generation of people in the kitchen, like our generation of people in the kitchen, right? Wanting to make massive changes for those that are in their kitchens, but they're like, the system kind of needs to be cracked from the top, right? Because it's a broken system. And I think we're constantly trying to fix it rather than just reinvent it. And there's definitely space to reinvent it. And I think the first reinvention needs to be, this is a safe space. You can have this career without worrying for yourself, your safety, and your livelihood, right? Because it's also really hard. And just like you said, there's such a large amount of trans homeless youth. And then once they turn 18, they're not youth anymore, but there's a very likely chance that they're still homeless, right? And so this whole vulnerability of being transgender, being in a position without stability, right? And then going into something like the restaurant industry where there is this kind of terrifying machismo vibe to it kind of estranges us from what could be this really beautiful sector of passion and food and a career, right? And I think that I, at least here in DC, and I know that in a lot of our major cities, we are seeing a major shift of a lot of us speaking out and trying to break the system from the top.
You know, when I think about putting these episodes together for you all out there, I always have this idea, like today's idea was, I'm going to take all these people
who are of a diaspora culture, all these like beautifully culturally rich people who've been on the pod and like, you know, include their stories. But you know what? In hindsight, as I'm looking at this, there is still struggle and strife, right? But it's about coming through and it's about like standing your ground and being really grounded in who you are and choosing you and showing up as you. And but yet still continuing the fight, right? Because in every story we've heard, right, there's still a little struggle happening. There's still a little coming through that needs to happen. And you know, just like, oh, it's so good. I love when that happens. Well, at least I think it's good. Let me toot my own horn. Boop, boop. I love Marcel Afram so much. And I also love the journey that I was on asking about queer food and what it meant. And this is what Marcel had to say. What makes food inherently like gay? Any thoughts or opinions on it?
I think that there is like, okay, so there's like this flair and this like finesse and this like almost like song and dance relationship, right? Like that connects the food with us as queer people, you know? Like there's this representation of like who we are, of this like passion and energy, right? Because like overall there's this passion for like capturing life, the essence of like everything, this like, you know, the joy of what it is to be queer people, right? And like when you're wearing that on your sleeve and you're creating food with that, like there, you can't really find that coming out in other spaces in the same way, right? Like there's just this real love affair.
Well, you know what? I'm going to use your own words against you, Marcel, here. Because I just quoted from your bio, you know, food has proven a worthy carrier of change. You hath said it to me. And as someone who's gone through a lot of change, right? From just growing up, period, right? Your story is one of change.
Yeah.
How does that apply to the food? Right? Because there, I think within there is the answer.
It's all about, for me, in that essence, it's all about, like, redeeming what's mine.
Redeeming what's mine. And once again, Marcel Afram brings us full circle of all the clips we've had today. You know, choosing you, acts of faith and courage, you know, being prideful in oneself, redeeming what's mine. Y'all, no matter what happens in the future with this podcast, whether it makes me a lot of money or no money at all, which it's making me no money at all, I will forever be indebted and so grateful to all my beautiful guests for like just imparting all this wisdom, whether they know it or not. Wow. Wow, guys. Oh, my God. Listen, before we close out, I wanted to bring in the one and only and the very beautiful Chef John Kung, and continue down the road of queer food and how it relates to his deeply rooted cultural cooking, which he calls third culture cuisine. And oh my God, the man is beautiful. The cooking is everything. And just take a listen to what his thoughts on queer food. Another journey I have been on this podcast to completely pivot and kind of started by the one and only and quite incredible Michael Twitty is talking about and defining what queer food is. And I love to ask all my guests, like, how do we define queer food, if at all, or is that a thing?
I mean, you know, classically as a gay man, queer food to me would be like a vodka soda with a lime. But I don't know personally if anything that I could, I've been so focused on like expressing myself through my cultural heritage that I never really considered my queerness to be a part of any of the food that I was actually serving. I would attribute a lot of credit creatively to my queerness and my ability to just be, I guess, like, just unafraid to express all of my passions through the medium of food. I guess it's been really inspirational to see a lot of the people, a lot of, like, the people that I look up to when it comes to what creativity and what self-expression is, have been people in, like, the drag scene, the nightclub scene here, and in music. Just watching the people do what they love and express everything that they are about them so freely and so fully have been points of inspiration to me to express everything from, like, my love of anime to my love of culture to my love of, like, my city through my food. And I think through that process, I think queerness has been kind of, like, important to how I go about doing that. But otherwise, like, you know, is, like, what is gay food? I don't know, brunch.
Yeah. Listen, we've had all sorts of answers on this podcast. And I mean, I started my journey because I didn't see myself represented, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, yes, you are really deep rooted in cooking culturally, but, you know, part of who you are, right? Yes, is your culture, but is being, you know, a person of the LGBTQ community and seeing that representation, right, for other young Asian LGBTQ people or people questioning, I think is really, really important. And I think it's what makes you special and what makes a lot, you know, all of my guests for the most part special, right? But those, especially those of color, because we still aren't represented in mainstream food media in that
right.
way, right? And so... But, and so to put that forth, right, within your cooking, however that is, I think there within lies the answer.
Yeah. Having the courage to say everything that I want to say in the way that I want to say it, I would absolutely attribute to my queerness. And that takes full credit for it. The ability to express myself in a way that isn't, like, inhibited by things like, you know, toxic masculinity or fear in general or societal fear in general. Like, you know, I already had to deal with all of that through living as a queer person. And so why would I allow anything that I had overcome before in life hinder me creatively in my work process? So yeah, all credit goes to that for sure, to being able to express myself in the way that I want.
Absolutely. I just love this question. And sometimes, you know, there are certain people who just don't know what to do with it. And that's also my favorite thing, just kind of watching, like, because it's a weird question. And, you know, it really gets the gears turning. And I've even had people come back at me being like, I hate you because this is all I've been thinking about for the past 3 days, you know. And we have Michael Twitty to thank for that one. Call me a broken record if you want, but this whole episode's just about standing in your truth. And I didn't even plan it that way. I love that John Kung so much. Go follow him on Instagram at Chef John Kung. Chef Maria Maison at Chef Mariajo. Authentic Food Quest is Rosemary's and Claire's Instagram. And today I'm going to leave you with Chef John Kung's coming out story because he has a really cute anecdote in there. Take a listen. You know, here on In Your Mouth, I would be amiss if we didn't talk about coming out because each and every one of our coming out stories are important. You know, because we never know who we can affect out there. And I'm curious to know if you would share your coming out story with us.
Mine? Well, let's... When is National Coming Out Day?
National Coming Out Day was October 11th.
I had no idea. Monday. Think... See, unfortunately, mine was pretty boring in the sense that, like, I didn't really have to say anything to anyone. Like, in the case of my parents, like, I kind of just came out to my mom by showing her a picture of the guy I was dating at the time. And that was like it. Well, I guess there is a little story behind that. Okay, so I was showing her the picture of this guy, and she was like, "Well, you know what? As long as you're being safe, I don't care what. Like, I'm just glad that you're happy." And then she looks at me and she's like, "You are being safe, right?" And I was like, "Well, because the guy was like, before we were doing anything physical, he wanted us to like wait for some reason, and so like we had been dating for like 2 or 3 months and we hadn't had sex yet." And yeah, I think
that's the Patty Stanger rule, millionaire matchmaker.
Right. And I told my mom that, like, well, we haven't really done anything yet. And she was like, "Well, how long have you been dating?" And I was like, 3 months. And she just looks at the photo and she's like, "It seems a little long to wait." I was like, "Okay." My mom called me a fruit.
Yep. Yes, she did. Listen, when moms are good, when moms of queer kids are good, they are good. Shout out to all the moms doing the work out there and taking care of us. And for those dads that have shown up too, we celebrate you. And that is hysterical. Is hysterical. And I thank you for sharing with us, because you know what? Coming out stories are unqualifiable. Mm-hmm. And so each and every one of our experiences is different and is part of our journey and who we've become today. And like I said, we never know who we can affect
or who is listening. Yes. Isn't that story so cute about his mom? And sure as hell, shout out to all the moms that show up and take care of us, even if they're not our birth moms. Shout out to all the dads that got to stand in place. If you're showing up for your LGBTQ kids, we honor you on this second week of Pride, folks. And like I said, our stories matter. Today was great. A great day of stories, right? Our stories matter. And so if any of these stories have affected you today, please reach out to me and let me know, or reach out to them and let them know too that you're listening, and that you've inspired them. And if you want to send me your story, please do. Please do. I'll figure out a way to share it for sure. I love all sorts of coming out stories. Tell me your story and I will figure out a way to share it. Or if you don't want me to share it, I'll keep it to myself too. I am a gatekeeper. No. Other than that, go support these beautiful people that I highlighted on the podcast today. Get your Pride merch. You still have some time to get it in before Pride, at least New York City Pride. And if your Pride is later on, then get it. You still have all the time in the world. You can go to www.themunoz.com/mouthmerch. And as I said, all proceeds are going to go to the Ali Forney Center, which I'm really excited to do so I can give back. And other than that, stay safe out there in these streets. Drink responsibly, folks. Take a lesson from me. Drink responsibly. Have a lot of water. Don't buy street liquor, or buy it, but don't buy 6 of them. And other than that, thank you for listening to In Yo Mouth.
Oh, that's right.
In Yo Mouth. I got the goosebumps.